with all of this choice, how do we make sure that we're getting our money's worth? It's our taxes. It's our money. We want children to be prepared to live in this present society and future society. How do we make sure that things are accountable? So, always been a major challenge, but as I look at this, four major different approaches to accountability, bureaucratic, professional, performance, and market. So the bureaucratic is what we're familiar with, right? You set it up and you've got a school board and the school board is assigned to principals and the principals and the teachers work together. And so we have this line of authority and if anything once it gets changed, you got to change the bureaucracy. Well, we know about that. Right? That just doesn't work. Or we have professional accountability. And so we make sure that you have met some standards for accreditation and that you can professionally perform your job and your duties. So that's another one we've used extensively. Performance is one that, I mean, that's 2002 and all that George Bush brought in with the No Child Left Behind, trying to have accountability, there's some real significant problems with that whole approach, but that's the idea. And then the market is if you've got more students who want to come to your school than you can handle, then you're doing a good job. And whether it's a good product or bad product, it's up to the consumer to decide. So bureaucratic, professional, dominated, and so as I said, 10% graduation rate in 1900, 70% in 1975, but it didn't change that much from 75 to 2000. I think this is the major point that we all recognize. That better prepared, better educated adults is going to help them, is going to help us, and we're just not getting the job done as we have structured our schooling today. So we talked about the movement to the information age with decentralization, customized economy, and rapid rate of change, and with that, I think that we're moving more towards the performance and the choice market systems of accountability. So what I see is not a jump, a leap from one to the other, but a transition. And I'm advocating that we manage that transition rather than have a chaotic movement, that we begin to think through what it is that it would mean to have performance. And if we use standardized achievement test scores, then holding whoever's responsible, whoever's accountable for those in terms of their responsibility. And today what we do is we hold teachers responsible, accountable, even though they're the least responsible. and so we've kind of got this backwards in terms of saying, what part of the total are you responsible for? And are you responsible for the performance of students in the classroom? Are you responsible for performance on those tests, standardized tests? Those are very different things, and we haven't really thought through that well. So if we're going to have every school a school of choice, and we're going to hold students accountable for that, this is what I'm saying that we need to consider to have every student do. One is a philosophy and identified values. And this morning when we started talking about essential learning, what is the philosophy that's guiding your decisions about what you think is important? See, if we don't talk about that philosophy, we don't talk about our values, then we have these discussions about what's important, but we don't really discuss the foundation. We haven't really talked about what the meaningfulness of that philosophy is. If you want to talk about standardized test scores, I can describe essentially the philosophy that that comes from, how that translates into learning theory, and how then standardized test scores are a natural outgrowth of that philosophy and learning theory. But if you change that, you don't wind up with standardized test scores as your measure of student achievement. That then translates into vision and mission statements, and so some of the things we've been hearing talking about a vision, I'm saying that there's behind that vision there's a philosophy, and we can get some discussions about our different visions. We're really talking about a different philosophy rather than the vision. But once we decide on that, you and I don't have to agree. Remember, we're going to decentralization, and we need to have the discussion, and then we can have some disagreements. But out of that whatever it is you decide, comes a vision and mission. Here's the other thing. We can have exactly the same vision, but I can have a different mission for my school than you have for your school. You shake your head like, does that make sense? I mean, to me, this is just, it doesn't require a lot of thought, and yet this is, I have some discussions with some folks who just don't get this, that if you have the same vision, then you have to be doing the same thing. No. You take a piece of the vision and you do that as best you think needs to be done. And in the mix of those things, our vision will be accomplished, even though we have a different mission in terms of how we get there. So, and out of that then comes our curricula and our performance standards. But if we start talking about what to do before we start talking about our philosophy and our vision and our mission, then it's like 3-year-old children in parallel play. I mean, yes, they're in the same room. Yes, they are saying something, but they're talking past each other. It's not a communication going on. There's simply talking going on. And so I would propose at the least that we can do is to say, whatever it is that we think is important, we recognize that there are some minimum standards that we want. You may not think that health and physical education is important, so you may not focus on that, but at least your students need to be able to do this. You may not think that being able to saw a board and drive a nail is important, but at least, so that's what I'm saying about minimum, that whatever we decide is important, we ought to have some things that we have some minimum. You can't go below that. Then we have to have some idea of proficient, and I would say at a national level, then we have a larger discussion which says that if you say this is important, we're going to set the bar higher for you. We have a whole bunch of different things that we say is important. When you say it's important to you and your school, at least you got to hit that level. And that comes out of some sort of national. For example, in mathematics, that there's the National Council of Teachers of Mathematics have had some discussions about what it is we would expect to have. You got to at least have considered that. And then, in terms of global, that if you say this is the most important thing that I'm going to be working on with my students, that you ought to have some ideas about what it would mean to be world class in that. And so that may be you may have one of those. It may be math or science or entrepreneurship or social emotional development or whatever, but you've got to say, the best that we see out there in the world being done, that's the standard we're setting for in this area. So that we don't have this idea of one performance standards. We have a number of these, and we don't have to have the same high levels for each area. That may just be impossible for us to get done. So, at this point then, we begin to implement. And so that's where we pull together our learning and developmental theories, our methods of instructions, lesson plans. And again, once we get to this level, if you and I have the same vision, the same mission, the same articulated level of standards, then we ought to get pretty close to what we think ought to be done here. And it may not be exactly the same, but we ought to have some congruence about this would be a good lesson to get that done. Because at this point now, we've gone through all that discussion about what's possible, and we want to begin to have some convergence so that we're efficient and effective with what it is we say should be done. And then we got to have some formative or process assessment for students and educators. And by this I mean, once we say this is what ought to be done, we have some way to check and say, is that what you're doing? So it's not so matter of did you hit the standard. That's not the issue here. The issue is, are you engaged in activities that if you continue on them, you will meet the standard? That's a very different evaluation process. So that we begin to say, we're making progress, we are not making progress, and we need to make some changes, but that's what that's for. That sort of evaluation is for progress rather than attainment. But then we have to have some sort of summative, which is churches out, as my mother would say, what's done. And so as bottom line, now I'm proposing though that we need to consider both qualitative and quantitative. And so far what we've allowed people like me with a measurement, evaluation, research background to dictate to you, implementers of the programs, that only numbers count. And that all the students' work and all your assessment, your personal assessment, all that doesn't count anything unless I have done a standardized measure of that and told you, you don't know if learning has occurred. And that's, I'm saying that's not right. That we need to consider all of these things, the student work that's being handed to us, it's not getting away of standardized testing, but it's not giving that the total weight. So now, how do we get that done? This is a huge, huge task. I'm just outlining this is what needs to be done. And then some sort of staff training and development. If every different school has a different mission and a different values and curricula to go with that, then we can't have a standardized process of training and development. This is not an automobile where I take the Chevy transmission, put it into the Buick. It doesn't work like that. And to think that we don't need different kinds of staff development and different training that needs to go on, we don't get the value of a different mission. So, and this is the other part that I think that financial transactions, the certification, we need to consider that professionally trained people will probably do a better job than untrained people. And if that's not true, how come? And then method of communication with students and parents and all the things we were talking about this morning in terms of networking and what that means to be able to stay connected and get people connected and to get different voices and ideas onto the table so that they can be considered so that the parents and students and teachers, everybody knows what's going on. That's another measure of accountability. So, so finally, you know, I was trying to get through this so we have some discussion. Hopefully, not everybody agrees with me. So here's what I'm saying: that the new opportunities. First of all, and this is primarily important in my perspective, is simple workable approaches to strategic planning. Now, how many of you had a course in strategic planning? Did you have a course? Were you leadership? What's that? And I would just say for most educators that that is not part of any kind of training program. And it's an unusual thing to be able to do. Now, if you were to make that ubiquitous, if you were to make your strategic planning course ubiquitous, what would be required to get that done, do you think? You can't imagine. Okay, so I didn't plan her. But even people who know how to do this don't know how to make it ubiquitous through our teacher training, educator training, administrator training. This is a tough task to do. We've done this, but we haven't made it simple and workable and across the board. Which means that we've got to develop these. How do you develop a philosophy? How do you develop a vision and a mission? What's the process by which you do that? What are the skill sets that you need? You know, how long does this take? How many people should be involved? What kinds of people should be involved? And on and on and on, right? The values, and then now, here's what I think is as important a point as I can make. We use technology as appropriate. We don't look and see what technology we have available and then use that for strategic planning. We develop the strategic planning process and then figure out how we can be more effective and efficient using technology. And that technology will change as technology changes. But we don't let technology drive us into a certain cookie-cutter approach to strategic planning. And I say that with all humility because when I first started working in this area, I started thinking about all the ways that technology could impact this process. And then as I started to actually work with some people, I very quickly saw that the technology was secondary to the implementation of that. So simple technology-based approaches to developing and sharing curriculum standards, performance standards, process. This is where I think that we can really use technology effectively is developing and communicating curriculum standards so that if I've worked out a task analysis of how to move through addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division, and I can then talk about that. I've already worked it out so that I know what's minimum competencies, what should be expected at what grade level by what children, and what are the best in the world doing. I don't need to you don't have to go through that whole process all over again. You need to find it, and you need to be able to access it quickly and efficiently, but it's not something that you need to go through. It's not like developing a mission statement that may be unique and you've got ownership to. And then performance standards, what does it mean to be minimum competency or national or expectations or national expectations or global? Who's doing the best? Well, I just haven't been all over the world. I can't tell you. But you show me what students can do, and I can say, well, my students can do that, or my students can do that. Right? And so I can begin to use what other people are doing to help me set the standards. And then processes of assessment and evaluation. And again, has any of you been involved in portfolio development? Have you done that? Where you take some student work and you put it nice in you, and you wind up with a nice thick piece of paper, stacks of paper that's excellent to keep the door open, other than that, because if you say, well, how much student improvement was that? Well, if you look at here, and then you got to go through and find the others. Well, here in the 6 months, it's not arranged well. Well, electronic portfolios and putting all that as artifacts and being able to connect that across standards, you can do it very, very quickly. And in 10 minutes, you can say, oh, over the past 2 years, a child has learned these kinds of skills and has increased in this kind of way, and it's fairly simple. So that's the kind of thing that I'm talking about there, being able to use that in terms of of evaluation. We do this all the time, where we get this test score that says you passed, you know, 70. You had a score of 70 and you passed. Well, did that mean that you passed on the necessary prerequisites for the next learning? Did you have anything that you were exceptional on? Could you do anything well? None of that information's in there. And with technology, it's able to pull that out and catch that fairly easily. And then producing annual reports, which is compiling some sort of, not only for individual students, but for classes and for schools and for whatever your unit of organization is, to be able to say, across this level of analysis, we've been able to do these kinds of things. And so that people have a way to make some judgments about effectiveness and efficiency. Without that data that can be summarized, then putting that and making decisions in terms of, well, let me see 30 educational student portfolios and I'll decide whether or not I want to send my child to your school. Not going to happen. You got to be able to summarize that, put that into some sort of annual report that you're using to demonstrate your effectiveness and efficiency. And then communicating. Technology is a way. How many people are using email? How many people want to give up email? So, my wife teaches at a middle school, and in the past, now she's in a private middle school that the student, the parents are, you know, upper middle class and wealthy. And in the past 3 years, she went from 50% of the parents using email to 95% of the parents using email. And in fact, it's even higher than 95. I think she has 3 parents who don't, and she writes them personal letters. For everybody else, she's able to send it out at one time. And that has made all the difference in the world in terms of reducing complaints from parents about you don't communicate. Well, here, final kicker here. Diversity of choice is going to grow. And it's going to grow not because it's the best idea, the right idea. It's going to grow because we're moving into the information age, where decentralization and customized economy and these other trends are, we're living with those. And we're going to expect those in terms of how we school our young people. And federal and state agencies should get out of the role of dictating what you should do and get into the role of developing curricula and pedagogy and accountability systems. And so we can look at the magnet schools. We can look at the charter schools. We can look at the variety of themes. They're already there. They've already developed a lot of this. And the federal and state agencies can pull this together and say, if you want to have this kind of a theme, here's some people who are doing some excellent work, and here's the criteria that we were using to judge them. And so you can use the past experiences. That's what they ought to be doing. In terms of pedagogy, which is to say that this way of teaching will get these results. If you want test scores, if you want social skills, if you want emotional development, if you whatever it is that you want, moral character development, these are the kind of things. And then accountability systems, which is instead of saying every child has to meet this standard, it's these are a variety of different ways. If what you want is a standardized test of basic skills, then here is a process by which you can go through. You select your objectives, and then we will help you develop a test to minimum standards, to national standards, to world-class standards, so that you can provide data to your parents and people that you communicate with in terms of how well you're doing. Rather than saying, we will set the standards for you, they ought to be facilitating this decision-making process of establishing standards. And then the means of communication. So one of the things that we've just kind of shared here, just having a couple of different systems, is how much sharing are we doing? I'm learning an awful lot. But how do I then communicate what I'm learning to everybody else. Well, states and federal governments can do that. Those of us who are involved in teacher training have to get out of the idea that we are agencies of the state. And so what I do at my institution is I train students in the model that they will be implementing in a school so they can meet state standards. So if you want to do something different in your school, that's not the training program we have. And I'm saying that we need to begin to think about that. We need to look out and say, you're running your school, you have a mission, how can I assist you in developing the qualified educators that you need to have? So now, I may not be able to do everybody. I mean, the idea that we've got 78 different languages in my school and I'm going to teach in 78, not going to happen. But at least I can say, this is what I have, and can you help me? And if I'm a university like Valdosta State, we're responsible for a region. Well, we need to look out there and see what's going on in our region and facilitate that development. Another university may have a different region, may have a national or international. Whatever that is, they need to look out there and say, what's available and how can we help? And especially in the area of communicating and networking. And when something's going on at a school, then picking that up and promoting that, some facilitating the exchange of information. That's not something that we're really good at the university level, teacher training level. What we're really good at is letting people go off, develop their course, and then assign the grade, and we're really good at registering that grade. That's really good. So that, you know, you walk through the university, you walk through the halls, and you get stamped, you know, A, it's like, you know, B, and so, you know, you get, and pretty soon you have all these labels on you, like you've been traveling Europe, and as soon as you get enough labels, we let you out the door, and you can go learn to be a teacher. So I'm saying that we need to be doing something quite different than that, that we need to be facilitating decision making at the building level, at the school level, and we need to then be communicating what's going on in these different programs. Well, this is one of my favorite quotes. You know, people take different roads seeking fulfillment and happiness. Just because they're not on your road doesn't mean they've gotten lost. And I think that's the message that I would like to extend, is that let's take a look at all those different roads that we think we ought to be traveling on. We may not want to travel. We may not want to go with you. But at least we ought to know that, and at the best we can, we ought to try to facilitate that.